Welcome
Welcome.
to Blue's Clues.
Oh my god.
I do think that Blue's Clues is a good it's a good kids analogy to our show, because we seriously have got to figure out who is funding this podcast.
Blue, tell us. You've got three clues.
We need
all three blank pieces of paper.
It's all checks that have been voided.
Yeah, so we'll still try to cash them. I'm not above check fraud.
I don't think that I am either.
Yeah,
not in this state, not in this post-capitalism.
Oh, landscape. I thought you meant Missouri.
Or yeah. In Missouri. It's tomato, tomato. You know what I mean? For those of you who are wondering who's funding this, we don't know. But mm-hmm. I am your host, Maddie Bird.
And I'm your host, Doug Terranova.
In today's episode, we are talking about Amelia Earhart.
Let me tell you, I've been so ready for this. We've had to put off recording this episode so much. And you're like, do not.
Look, that's what I was going to ask. Have you looked anything up yet?
No. And let me tell you, so I am a fucking nerd. And so
shocker.
My algorithm is like, hey, crazy little facts that pertain to history and things mm-hmm. like that. And do you know how hard it is just in the course of my day to avoid things about Amelia Earhart? I didn't.
So weirdly, I'm not surprised by that at all. And I don't know if it's because we're all in a simulation, yeah. Which I know that you have to do that episode and you'll explain it to us.
But it breaks my brain.
But I am starting to feel like the simulation is moving too fast, because this is another one like the Area 51 episode mm-hmm. where we're going to come back full circle at the end of this.
Yeah. I don't know. Like so I have guesses about the Amelia Earhart thing, but I'm not going to say it. But I do feel like whatever it is that is recent news is a weird filler episode in the show that is Earth.
In the show that is Earth. Yeah. No, for real. It's like, oh, there's nothing else going on.
Yeah, we don't have anything plot relevant this time.
Yeah, so we have to, let's just excursion over
here. You remember Amelia Earhart? Let's pull her back.
I never forgot about her. Thank you very much.
And I said this to you the other day, but like, I fully 100% expected you to be a huge Amelia Earhart fan,
yeah,
without 100%. You even needing to tell me that.
And so the other night, Doug and I are at a show, and I was like, don't look up Amelia Earhart. And then I was like, I don't want to spoil any of the facts that I have for a show, and this is not a spoiler, but I am in love with Amelia Earhart. And Doug was like, I think I knew that already.
Like, you never told me, but I knew.
Yeah. I did years ago. I don't know if you remember when we were getting like a lot of tattoos and like post 2020 mm-hmm. like feeling like, oh my god, I have to do something, we need tattoos.
Yes.
I almost got the like a old kind of a bust style of Amelia Earhart. American Classic, which all my tattoos are American Classic,
yeah.
But like a like very stylized bust of Amelia Earhart. I almost got that tattoo, and I never did, but it's one of the things that's like in the back of my mind, like, oh yeah, I could do that.
You could do that. That would be awesome. What did you get instead?
What did I get instead? I actually just ended up getting more flowers and leaves and vines and things.
I didn't know if this was around the time that you got the Painted Lady from Avatar Last Airbender.
I did do the Painted Lady from after this.
Two very inexplicably queer options there.
Yes, yeah. 100%.
Like, I can't explain why the Painted Lady from Avatar is a queer tattoo to get, but it is.
Is it because I have it?
Maybe that's why. Maybe it's because it's on a queer person.
So speaking of Avatar the Last Airbender, for all of our audience who may not know, it is almost, I want to say 2/3 to 3/3 so 66 to 100% of my personality in any given moment.
Yeah, that's so I didn't jump on the Avatar train until it was put on Netflix in 2020.
Yeah.
And I think when I told you I'd never watched it before, that you died, like, a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, I was like, I killed Maddie just now.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Like, you have... So, Doug and I sometimes... we actually were recently talking about, like, the, you know, the perils of friendship and making friends as an adult and how we've built our relationship. And it is one of the things that, like, I look for in other people. Not even necessarily that you have seen it, but just that, like, you respect it.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you would watch it, you would probably... Like it.
And so you have seen it, and, and your thoughts on it now are...
Oh, no, yeah, I'm 100%
in, you know?
And now this podcast will definitely come out after the fact here, but there's the new show coming out.
Yes.
Thoughts?
Okay, so I've heard it's good, and I've heard it's bad, and I've heard that they've taken stuff out, and they've made Aang serious, and they made Sokka not sexist, so that he doesn't have that character arc in the first season.
Yeah.
And I am so worried that I am going to watch the show and react to it the way that, like, boomers and Gen Xers reacted to the new Star Wars. It's not what I grew up with!
This is not the Star Wars of my youth. There's girls in it, for one thing. The Sokka sexism thing I thought was interesting because I'm like, he is a kid, and, like, it wasn't... I'm not a woman, so I can't speak too much into it, but, like, I'm like, I don't even feel like he's being sexist as much as he's just trying real hard to be what he thinks is a man, and he's 13 or 14 years old.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was exactly his whole deal, and then he learned sort of beyond that because he wanted to be, more than anything else, a warrior like his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then he just didn't have any male guidance at that point. Just, so it's,
like, his fucking grandma. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so very quickly in the show, and, like, in the Kyoshi episodes where he learns how to be a warrior.
The Kyoshi episode's like it's like the third or fourth episode.
Exactly. Like, yeah. And it, like, immediately, like, rectifies itself. And then after that, he continues to grow and change and figure out the things that make him a good warrior and leader. And it, like, his arc, I feel like, is a little bit underrated because he really does grow a lot throughout the show.
Yeah. Well, welcome back to our Avatar The Last Airbender podcast.
Listen, we gotta get back to Amelia Earhart because I will keep going. Okay, so for Amelia Earhart, first of all, we have to get into, we know about Amelia Earhart, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no, I don't feel like it's...
I think the mic just picked up my tummy growling.
The tummy wumbles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that there's anybody, unless you're living under a rock, who has not heard about Amelia Earhart.
Yeah, no, I can't even tell you the first time I learned about Amelia Earhart. It's just so one of those things. It was like, honestly, like Area 51 is one of those things that you just, as a child, you know about her.
Yeah.
Like, you know the whole deal about, like, she was this great pilot. She was trying to go, was it around the world?
It was around the world.
Yeah, and then she got lost. Yeah, I think that everybody has to know that story growing up.
Right, and, like, our listeners, anybody who is not, so, like, we're obviously in the United States.
Yeah.
She was from the United States, and this was all based there. So, like, it's part of the U.S. just consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of our core.
Yeah, I would say a lot of Western, like, European-centric culture probably knows the name.
Yeah. But I don't know if anybody beyond that does.
Yeah.
Because she did travel to, like, everywhere else going around the world.
Yeah.
So if you have or have not heard Amelia Earhart, please let us know. Send us an email.
I'd be really interested if you never heard of Amelia Earhart to know where you're from.
And then give us your thoughts after I explain everything to you.
And your credit card numbers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Give us more
of you're funding this podcast.
And I knew it. Okay, so you've obviously heard of Amelia Earhart.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tell me, what have you heard as far as, like, her life? Like, what is your base knowledge of Amelia Earhart and her disappearance?
Honestly, just the basics. Like, I know that she was this very accomplished female pilot, which was groundbreaking. Honestly, at that time, pilots, I think, were still kind of groundbreaking.
Yeah.
It's not been around that long. But, and that she was going to fly around the world. I know that a little bit about, like, there was some weirdness on the day she went missing. Like, there were some storms and, like, going in and out of contact. That is the only thing I know. And then I know that people have crazy conspiracy theories about it.
They do have crazy conspiracy theories about it. Okay, so going into it, that's kind of what I knew about it. I would say that I maybe knew a couple of extra things. Like, I knew that she was born in Atchison, Kansas.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You didn't know that? No. So I, because we had to put this off, like, recording this one, I was actually so hoping that we could do a day excursion and go to the museum in Atchison.
Gosh, we still should.
We still should.
And then we could just make some videos and have, oh my God, social media content.
Oh my God, social media content. But we totally could. So before this and, like, in school, I think as somebody like myself who's a little tomboyish and, like, you grow up sort of in that, like, category as a young girl, she's somebody that you, like, tend to learn about, I think, pretty early on. So I took an interest in her when I was a kid. I've actually been to the Atchison Museum.
Ooh.
It's her grandparents' house that they turned into a museum.
Yeah, I guess that's close enough of a relation. Yeah, it's not like this is her cousin's wife's brother's house.
Like, she was, well, she was born in Atchison. They lived there for a while, and then she was raised by her grandparents for a little bit. So, like, she lived in the house.
Also, for anybody that's not in Kansas or Missouri, my surprise of her being from Kansas is only because of proximity. When I was like, oh, really? If you're, like, in, like, Oregon or something, you're like, what's so special about that? Nothing.
It's just that we are also here.
We're very close.
She was a good Kansan. so my relationship to that. And then also she was born in 1897 and I was born in 1997.
Basically the same.
So I was like, 100 years apart. Like, yeah. But, like, I'm going to be.
But the same
but
woman.
The same. We both have curly hair.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So I liked when I was a kid, and, like, this really, again, for me, kind of brings that back full circle. So let me take you through the facts of her life.
Okay.
Because her disappearance was so pivotal and she had so much fame at that point that her life has actually become pretty well documented. So, like I said, she was born in Atchison, Kansas. She was born on July 24th, 1897.
Wait, she was born a day before your birthday, too?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's part of it.
That's crazy.
100 years in one day. And so she spent most of her youth either in Atchison, or she spent her summers here in Kansas City. So, like, basically her parents lived in Kansas City, her grandparents lived in Atchison, she traveled back and forth. Her first experience with an airplane was in 1908. It was in Des Moines. She went to a state fair with her parents, and she is actually quoted saying that the plane that she saw was a thing of rusty wire and wood and looked not at all interesting.
And so she said, oh, yeah, that's going to be my new thing.
So first she was like, honestly, I don't know why I would give a shit about this. Okay. And then throughout her childhood, she goes through some family troubles. Her dad actually struggled with alcoholism. They had to move around. Things happened. She ended up leaving Kansas City and Atchison, and they moved to Chicago.
Yeah.
With her mom and her sister. That's where she graduated from high school. And shocker, she was real good at science.
Good for her.
But she was also kind of a loner, which I didn't know about her, because she's, like, documented later as being very charismatic.
She was a fucking nerd.
But she was a fucking nerd. They put her, apparently, in her yearbook. Her yearbook caption under her, like, photo was A.E., the girl in brown who walks alone. Which is such a drag.
That, the girl, what a read. The girl in brown
who walks
alone. Those shady bitches.
Right, though? Like, I feel like there is such another way. First of all, I love that in, like, 1916, the way that people just needed to be a poet.
Well, that's, it's very, like, everybody is a character in, like, a Western.
Yeah.
Like, that's, this is the girl in brown who walks alone.
Right.
This is the man whose spurs have never touched a horse.
Yes, exactly. And I'm like, damn, son. Okay, but maybe she just couldn't afford to have other clothes. Like, fuck.
I feel like brown has got to be a pretty standard color for, like, cheaper clothes, right? I don't know.
Like, the dye or something. Also, like, I don't know. I also wear a lot of brown.
Yeah,
like,
now, what would they... Oh, my God, what would they say about us? Yeah. Like that's,
I feel like my caption, if somebody else had done it, would be like, we're all pretty sure she's gay.
Yeah. No, same caption. Yeah.
Like, I came out after high school, and they were like, we know. I'm like, okay, well,
mine fine. Would just be the flamingo that doesn't know what to do with their hands.
With their like, hands. But what color? Are you in pink or are you in brown?
I'm just in all colors.
All colors. I'm
very colorful.
The person in rainbow doesn't know what to do with their hands.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay, so then after she graduates from high school, for a couple of years, she was like, you know what? I'm going to go pursue higher education. So she ends up at a pretty good finishing school. She's actually at the top of her class. She's real good at science. But then she doesn't graduate. She was like, the war is happening. I need to be part of
The Great War.
The Great War.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she ends up in Toronto, and she volunteers as a nurse to help patch up wounded soldiers. And that's actually where she got the interest in flying. So while she was in Toronto, she goes to another one of these state fairs.
I'm just imagining. I'm sorry. She sees all these wounded pilots and was like, I want to do whatever they were doing.
Yeah, really, though.
They're, like, bleeding out, squirting blood. She's like, this seems fun.
This seems like this is good for me. So, fun fact, too, about her is that, like, when she was growing up and she was all tomboyish, like, she had to have, like, custom, like, skirts and play clothes made that, like, basically had pants underneath them. Because she couldn't wear pants.
Pioneer.
But she was also tearing her...
Fashion icon.
Yeah, exactly.
Love her.
And it was all in brown. The other thing I find funny about the in brown comment is that all of our photos of her are obviously in black and white.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, what other colors were there? It was black and white back then.
But the thing is, like, the recolorized pictures are all, like, brown leather bombers.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Look, she was a pilot, okay? She was a pioneer. It was her destiny to wear brown. So anyway, she goes to this, like, exposition. And there is this guy, and he, like, dive bombs at her and her friend to kind of, like, show off and be like, ooh, I'm a man with a penis.
Would
and
that work on anyone?
Well, it didn't work on her.
No, well.
Pioneer, you know.
Yeah.
We'll get into my theories as to why it didn't work on her.
I think it's I have the same theories.
This is our queerest episode yet. Okay, so, like. So then he does this, and she's like, ooh, he's like kind of showboating. But she's basically like, I could fucking do that.
Love you know it. The TikTok I love that energy. Sound?
Yes, where she's like, I could do it. Like, it can't be that hard. Boys do it.
Yeah.
That's literally her mentality.
I mean, work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then after that, she was like, well, fuck it. I'm going to get me a plane. So she she does a bunch of odd jobs, and then she ends up, like, moving across the country, and she goes to LA, where her parents have gotten back together. And she's like, coolio, let's do it. So then in 1920, she has her first flight. She wasn't flying the plane. There was a pilot. His name was Frank Hawk. He is not important to the story, but he
fuck
took
you,
her
Frank.
Up in the plane. And because she attended another air show.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I'm learning is at this time, and I can't blame them because flying was so new, lots of air shows.
Oh.
People just go in.
I guess, I mean, yeah, it was so new that, like, it'd been around, like, less than 20 years.
Yeah.
I guess.
You know, I should have looked it up, but I didn't.
Well, when you said 1908, I was like, I think that's within, like, a year or two of planes existing.
Yeah.
Like, it's, yeah. But yeah, no, I imagine that there also cable didn't exist.
Right. Like what were people doing?
Reading.
Listening to the radio. There weren't even pictures. So, okay. So then she goes up in the airplane and she's like, this is the shit for me. So then the following January, 1921, she starts taking flying lessons. She continues to work odd jobs to pay for the flying lessons. During that time, she's a photographer, a stenographer, and a truck driver.
Damn.
Right? Like, it's okay. Just, she's very, like, I'll just do whatever. And, it's like, just, very, I don't know.
To have that amount of motivation.
Right?
It just doesn't seem natural.
It's also very lesbian of her. But it's very that's lesbian. For later in the episode. Yeah. I'm going to keep saying that.
Spoiler. We think she's a lesbian.
We think she's a lesbian. Okay. So then she does actually very quickly, still in 1921, she gets to buy a plane. She calls it the Canary. Clever. She gets her flying license in December of that year. She flies in it's called the Pacific Coast Ladies Derby in Pasadena. So she gets her flying lessons and and then 2 days later she does a competition.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine that there would have been a ladies derby, but who knew? Yeah,
there's a derby. Ladies got derbies no matter what.
Roller derby, plane derbies.
I'm sure there is a third derby.
There's another derby. Comedy rule of three.
So then that happens, and then the next year. She sets an unofficial record for altitude for lady pilots, which is around 14,000 feet. Then in 1923, I keep wanting to say 2023.
Yeah.
This was 100 years ago.
Yeah, it's different.
She gets her international pilot's license, which she's the 16th woman to ever do that.
So it's still groundbreaking.
Still groundbreaking.
Yeah.
1924, big shocker, her parents split up again. So she moves, her and her mom, they move from LA. They actually go back to Boston, where her sister is. She goes back to school, and she's like, I'm going to go back to pre-med, which is what she was doing before. And then she was like, honestly, fuck this. Mm. So she becomes a teacher and a social worker, and she starts teaching.
What didn't she do? Yeah.
I was watching a documentary about her, and then they were like, and then she had this job, and then she had this job. I don't even have them all listed.
The most capable woman in the world.
And she was just like, 6 months is too long for any one job.
Also, I feel like that my statement might have come off chauvinist, not because she was a woman, just if she's a very capable person.
Okay, this is the first we're hearing of women being capable in all of history.
No. Maybe. Listen, I know straight men are weird about things, but I understand the need for a capable lesbian in my life. That's why you're here.
Yes! Okay, so she teaches English to immigrants coming into Boston. Then in 1927, she actually joins the Boston NAA, which is like the National American like aeroplane people. Oh. And she's featured in a newspaper article. So this is when she first like has like any amount of public notoriety.
They were like, women outside.
Yeah, doing stuff. And she's wearing pants. Spoiler alert, they were brown.
They were brown pants. I assume in the 1920s, everybody's a giant misogynist today.
I would assume so. So she is featured in a newspaper. People are like, oh, like a lady pilot. This is a person. So she gets a call from a couple of other pilots, and they're like, we are going to fly across the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh.
And you can come with us and be the first woman to fly across the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay, I thought there was something with the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so in, it was like June 17th through the 18th, 1928, they fly across the Atlantic Ocean. She flies with Wilmer Stoltz and his co-pilot, Louise Gordon. They're the pilots. She's not the pilots. She's the captain, the quote-unquote captain. So basically she just is on the plane, which was upsetting to her. She got off the plane and everybody loved it. They were like, a woman did this. She flew across, but she told everybody when they came back, she was like, yeah, it was basically just a sack of potatoes. Like, she's quoted saying sack of potatoes.
I love that she was like, no, this is not how I wanted this.
Not it. She was also quoted saying, I think I'm just gonna have to try to do it by myself. But this explodes her into fame. So like that summer after the flight, she writes a book on the experience. She gets a publicist. His name is George Putnam. He is important to the story.
Okay.
Georgie. He makes her a star. Everybody starts calling her Lady Lindy, which is kind
of Charles Lindbergh.
Yes.
Okay.
So everybody is like, you are the.
That's very nice, but I also don't love it.
Yeah. I completely agree. Everybody is like, Charles Lindbergh is a famous pilot, and you're a woman, so you're the lady.
the lady Lindy.
Right. This one I thought was so interesting. As one of her jobs now, she becomes the aviation editor of Cosmopolitan magazine.
What?
Which I didn't know that was a thing, and I haven't looked it up because I would like to believe that it is.
I would like
still
to believe
real.
That they still have their aviation editor.
Somebody
it's
just
right next to new sex positions to try with your partner.
Yes. And I just imagine like they're at the, you know, the Cosmo building. There's just like a little tower.
Yeah.
And you go in there and it's somebody in like a little like 1920s aviation hat.
Get me the wires.
Get me on the radio.
That's really what did the Cosmopolitan magazine used to be?
I truly.
Jeez, that's man. For another episode, the conspiracy theory. What happened to Cosmo?
The history of Cosmo. Okay, and then so Putnam's actually like a really good publicist, gets her a line of luggage, so she's got her own luggage. She gets a sponsorship with Lucky Cigarettes because back then cigarettes were healthy.
I believe they might still be. just kidding, don't smoke. What I want to use my platform for?
for evil. It was never healthy. That was a joke. Okay, so then in August of 1929, this is a year later after that flight, she buys a single engine Lockheed Vega, which is just a plane.
Okay. Like
She bought a plane.
A small plane.
And then she actually helps found the 99s, which is the first organization for female pilots.
Oh, wait. Okay.
Yeah. So that's what she buys a plane. She helps found this organization. She becomes like the VP or the president of the organization for a little while. 1930 comes around. She sets several records. Between 1930 and 1935, 7 speed records and distance records in total. In 1931, she marries George Putnam.
Mm.
And this, spoiler alert, because she's a lesbian.
She's very much a lesbian.
She wrote him a letter.
She just needed her own checking account.
Yeah. She wrote him a letter / like prenup situation. And in the letter wrote, I do not expect you to abide by any archaic notion of staying faithful.
This is just, he was a beard.
Yeah, he was a beard.
And this was
marriage at
convenience, and I love that. I, of course, listen, this is why lesbians excel where gay men don't, is that she was like, no, we're organized. Here's a here's a list of the expectations I do not have.
Right, and it is notarized.
Yeah.
And the fun part, too, is that he had to propose 6 times before she said yes, and also in that letter and as a like stipulation of saying yes to the proposal, this was a big thing. She was like, I will not be your property.
Hell yeah.
And so she was big feminist girly.
She was like, can my friend / roommate live with us?
Yeah, we're roommates, good friends.
Yeah, we actually will sleep in one bed, and you don't have to be there.
Yeah. You can go do whatever you want.
You can be in a different house
if you look at this letter. I don't give a shit what you do. So they get married. In 1932, she flies across the Atlantic Ocean by herself. Nice. This got her a gold medal. And where she landed in Ireland, which hopefully my wife and I will get to go to Ireland as part of our honeymoon, there is a small museum where she landed.
Oh.
And that would be so fun to go to.
Yeah.
1932, she becomes the first woman to solo across the North American continent. Mm-hmm. I think she flew from California to New York, or maybe it was the other way, but either way, she flew across.
Yep.
And then around this time, she is invited to the White House.
Ooh.
By President Roosevelt.
Oh, nice.
Where she meets Eleanor Roosevelt, which is suspicious.
And they became close?
They became very close friends.
Yeah. Eleanor Roosevelt, also notable lesbian. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And both of them were, like, women who were very, like, attuned to public perception and yeah. how to be, like, a woman in fame. Because Amelia was also, like, known for being, like, I don't want to say, like, ditzy, but she would, like, play up some elements of femininity when she was on camera. And I mean, then
get what you gotta get, girl.
Exactly. Like, yeah. And so it was like she kind of like lulled the American public and the misogynist men into like this space mm-hmm. of like, I am a woman, but then would turn around and create organizations,
yeah.
fund to help other women become pilots, like full feminist mode.
I think, yeah, using people's expectations against them is one of the most powerful things you can do.
Yes.
Like, absolutely play on that. If people think that you're weak and ditzy and dumb, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
And Eleanor Roosevelt has been noted doing similar things. She like kind of knew how to like cry yeah. on command. So like these two are a power couple.
Did you know that Eleanor Roosevelt and FDR were fifth cousins?
What is a fifth cousin?
It's like a third cousin, but two more. So they're like, so at that point, they're not, at third cousin, you're not blood related, and at fifth cousin, you're not legally related, but they still saw each other at the family barbecue, you know what I'm saying? Like, they both called okay. Teddy Roosevelt uncle.
Interesting.
I think.
Interesting.
At least she did. I don't actually know where he was on the FDR side, but...
I am confused.
They were both related to Teddy Roosevelt more than they were related to each other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I sure. can't, I, hold on. I have a copy of the Roosevelt family tree. Let me bust it up.
This is what I keep on me at all times. This is my Roman Empire. Oh. Okay, I didn't know that. I really yeah. liked your explanation of it's like third cousins, but two more. Perfect. This is a very helpful explanation, Doug. I'm glad.
Yeah. Hey, I'm here to educate.
Would you say that it's like being second cousins, but three more? Or is
it's exactly like that.
It's yeah. exactly yeah. like that? I was worried they would be too different. Okay, so they become good friends. They hang out. She's in the public eye a lot. They do a lot of things. In July of 1936, Purdue finances a new and custom plane for Amelia Earhart.
Ooh.
This is a Lockheed Electra 10E, and they retrofit this with several modifications because she wants to go around the world.
Okay. I really love the mid-century names for things, by the way. Like, Electra is really cool.
It is cool.
It's a really cool name.
Like, that's why I wrote down the names of the planes.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this is a Lockheed Electra 10E.
Yeah, it's so
cool.
I don't
know what the fuck that means, but...
So cool.
Yeah. Just like, I don't know how a compass works.
We don't have to.
Listen to the last episode.
We got GPS now. We don't think I need a compass.
We don't know how this works. And this was kind of cool. Something that somebody pointed out, which I think is fun, is that this was like a fundraised situation, i.e. men were raising money for a woman to fly around the world.
Hell yeah.
In a custom plane.
Listen, I love that. She's so groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Girl boss.
So they fundraise the plane. They soup it up because they need it to carry a lot of extra fuel because mm-hmm. she wants to go around the quote-unquote the waste of the world. So she wants to...
Oh, like the equator?
Like the equator. Oh, so okay. She wants to go like the longest route possible.
The fattest part of Earth.
Right. Yeah. Which had never been done before.
Okay.
People had done around the trip flights before this, but yeah. they were at like, is it latitude?
I think latitude. Yeah. Yeah.
Latitude, fatitude. Isn't that what the
That's
mnemonic
sure.
is?
Yeah.
And so distance wise, the circumference was lesser.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she was like, I don't want to do that. I want to go like the
She's like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to fucking do it.
And so they planned it out. She was set to go in March of 1937. And the plan was to fly from Oakland, California, and then she was going to make a stop at Howland Island,
mm-hmm.
Hawaii, Oakland. Yeah. So Oakland back to Hawaii. And then she was going to go fly from there to, like Somalia and back all the way around mm-hmm. that way. So the problem arises immediately. March 17, 1937, They take off. She flies from Oakland to Honolulu. And when they land, the plane basically falls apart.
Damn.
So they land. The landing gear comes off.
Come the fuck on, Purdue. What the fuck?
One of the engines is fucked. She had four people with her on this first leg of the flight. It was Fred Noonan. Her captain was Harry Manning. And then she had Paul Mance as well. So they get there. The plane falls apart. Harry Manning and Paul Mance are like, I am not doing this anymore. And they have to dip. So they send the plane back.
Yeah, the plane fell apart.
Yeah, the plane fell apart.
Yeah, I would also be like, well, I'm done.
Yeah. So they send the plane back from Hawaii to Oakland. They fix the plane. And then on June 1st, they try again.
Okay.
But it's only Amelia and Fred.
Okay.
And so their second attempt starts. Now, because of this, there's shift in weather and they have to completely redo. So instead of going the way that she was originally going to do, now they're going the opposite way.
Okay.
So they're flying from California back across, like more toward, like towards the east coast. Got and it. Around that way. So instead of west, they're going east.
Okay. I feel like they should just stop at Hawaii and count it. Like, you did it.
Yeah, you did it. Like, this, I mean, if we count that, technically she did go around the world.
I count it. Yeah.
So they take off, and everything is mostly fine. They don't really get along super duper well.
Oh, that's unfortunate because it's very close quarters.
Because it is very close quarters, and that's probably, like, part of it. And apparently Fred Noonan is also a drinker, which I would imagine is maybe not great in this situation.
No, I mean, yeah, that's if pilots today can't be drinkers.
Yeah. And he's the navigator, and it's not like today's navigation where we have enough technology to kind of
like
using like
the fucking stars and shit.
Legitimately using the stars and like doing actual calculations. So by the end of like towards the end of their trip, she writes back to Putnam and is like, things are fine enough. We're having a couple of personnel issues. And it's like, Amelia, there's two of you.
So it's if it's not you.
It's probably Fred. And so then this brings them back around. And this is the most dangerous part as well. Because they've gone across the Atlantic and they're coming back around and they're flying across the Pacific. So they take off on July 2nd, 1937.
Okay.
And they're flying to Howland Island, which is a teeny tiny, like, basically, like, American, like, base like type.
Military base type
Navy
deal. Okay.
Situation. Now, the Navy is there, posted, ready to help her fly in.
Okay.
But two things happen. The night prior and the night of this trip, so because these are taking, like, 15 hours, so there is nighttime.
Yeah.
We're overcast. So Fred can't get his bearings because he doesn't have the stars. Oof. To get them back on that longitudinal line. And number two, because they don't have Harry Manning and Paul Mance on the flight, they've got this new radio that they don't apparently super understand how to use.
Cool.
And so they're radioing down to the Navy and they're like, we are on like the coordinates, basically. Like, we're on the line. We should see Howland. We cannot see Howland. It's overcast and they can't actually radio back to her. Something happened in the communication and it was only going one way.
Okay.
So they couldn't establish communication, and then Amelia is recorded saying two things. Like, first of all, she's getting more and more not agitated but like fearful.
Yeah, sure.
And she's saying that they're running low on fuel, and then her very last words ever recorded or unknown is wait.
Oh.
And then radio silence. And never they've never been seen from again.
Oh my god.
So that is the story of Amelia Earhart.
I don't know if I realized how like just how much she did for like women pilots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, not just by being a great pilot, but like organizing the 99 and things like that. Yeah. Like that's crazy.
Yeah. And she was very involved in these things.
Mm-hmm.
And she really had great ambitions. And when this happened, she's not even 40 yet. Like this would be, she would have turned 40 this month
that
she went missing. And so she's done a lot. at this point. So that brings us to our conspiracy theories.
Okay.
Which is what happened. There are three, and then the fourth one is just that she's a lesbian.
Oh, okay. Got it. Love it. Yeah, okay. So I can already say 10 out of 10 on that one. Believe it.
I want to start with, she's a lesbian, yeah. And that is, she was close personal friends with Eleanor Roosevelt, noted lesbian.
Noted lesbian.
And during an event in Baltimore, the two of them literally ran off, got into Amelia's plane, and took like a joyride.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. That's the main evidence that I have for Amelia being a lesbian. So
I don't need anything else. For the first time ever on this podcast, 10 out of 10.
They were definitely in love. I have one other piece of evidence for her being a lesbian. When she went down and nobody heard from her, so it's been 24, 48 hours, and we're like, holy shit, she is lost. President Roosevelt launched the biggest, to this day, Navy and Coast Guard rescue mission and search ever. Nothing has even topped it now.
For his wife's lover.
For his wife's lover. And yeah. I'm like, would he have done that anyway? Like, even if they weren't?
Maybe. I mean, she's, like, famous or whatever. But, like,
yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that in my head, he knew and was very accepting about this romance, because also, like, dang, get the old lady off my back. I'm trying to run a country here.
But I don't even think it's that. I think that Eleanor went to him and was like, you will use every resource to find my woman, or I will burn this country down.
I will. We don't have nuclear codes yet, but I will find out.
I will deploy
the nukes in a few years when we have them.
Yeah, you just wait. Okay, so that's her being a lesbian. The first conspiracy theory is that, and this kind of goes hand in hand with the search, is that she was a spy. So President Roosevelt recruited her.
I'd heard something like this before. Yes.
So she was a spy, and she was taken prisoner.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so on the website that I was telling you about before, which I haven't actually gone to, but it was cited, and it's called militarycorruption.com. And I'm just afraid to go to it.
Yeah.
I haven't gone to it.
Because of the truth.
Because of the truth. There is a theory that the U.S. Secretary of the Navy, James Forrestal, was involved in the cover-up and the destruction of Amelia's plane in 1944.
Okay.
So she had crashed. She was taken prisoner by the Japanese. And they got her plane back to the United States in 1944 and destroyed it so that nobody would know about it.
Okay.
And then the other theory, kind of like, not necessarily theory, but evidence for this, is that people thought that they could hear her voice on the radio as what they called at the time Tokyo Rose, which was English speaking women on the radio broadcasting propaganda for the Japanese. So any woman who did that was called Tokyo Rose.
Oh, okay. So let me ask, where did she go missing? Like, she was off the coast of California?
Kind of. I mean, it was basically in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, okay. So closer to Japan.
Closer to Japan, yes.
But I assume if she was in, like, radio contact range, she probably wasn't, like, over Japan.
No, she wasn't over Japan. She ended up, so where Helen Island is, there's basically two, like, land masses that she could have fallen on. Mm-hmm. And so one of them was Gardner Island, which was south by around 300 or so nautical miles. Do not know what the difference between nautical mile is and a regular mile. Don't tell me. I want to live
is nautical.
In ignorance. Actually, do tell me. I would like to know.
I just looked up a map of where Howland Island is. But yeah, you're right. Middle of the Pacific.
Yes. And then the other one was in Jaluit.
Cool.
Which was another island more towards the west of Howland.
Also, a nautical mile is slightly longer than a mile on land.
Hmm. Why?
Why is a nautical mile? It's based on the Earth's longitude and latitude. That's what?
Oh, so it's like a curved mile.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
Yeah, but the Earth's flat, so I don't know.
Spoilers, that's another episode. The true conspiracy is that all conspiracies that we do on this podcast are true.
We're actually, who's funding this? The government. Telling us to use our wit and platform mm-hmm. to just annihilate these true that's conspiracy
exactly.
theories.
I'm actually on an NDA from militarycorruption.com, which is why I cannot go to the website.
We actually just violated said NDA. Yeah.
They're gonna find me. Okay, so Jesuit is part of the Marshall Islands,
okay,
which was at the time occupied by the Japanese. Okay. And so that's kind of, so she was a spy taken prisoner mm-hmm. is conspiracy theory number one.
So, and that's also, I guess, probably, is it supported by like, yeah, she had all these flights. Over
and
the
she
Atlantic,
was going and she was around, going the,
around
world,
the world
and she was picking up information and then radioing that back to the president.
She was very specific about where she was going
yes.
to. Okay. I mean, so here's the thing. Is there more on this one?
Or not that, on
okay.
this one.
Is there are notable, I was just reading about other celebrities that were used as spies in World War II.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of singers, mm-hmm. Actors and actresses. So my gut would normally be to be like, the most famous pilot in America is probably the worst spy. Mm-hmm. But like, I guess if like she gave a reason, like I'm flying over this area because this is my excursion adventure across the world, like this,
yeah,
don't even worry about it. It would be, I guess, a pretty prime time to gather intel. Like, what are you looking at?
Right.
You know,
people are welcoming her with open arms.
Yeah, and she's like, having to stop at different places in the world.
Yeah.
It's a great time to meet another asset or something.
Yeah.
So it's not the least believable theory. However, I think that where it breaks down is the cover up mm-hmm. with the plane that Japan sent it back to us. And then we are like, oh,
we have to destroy it here.
We have to destroy the evidence because we can't let people know that she was a spy and a prisoner. And then like the whole like Tokyo Rose thing, like, I don't buy that either. So like, had me in the first half, but then whenever you start to look at the rolling consequences of if that were true, sort of falls apart for me. So 5 out of 10, like
five
I could see
10?
That she was a spy, but I don't believe that we covered up her being taken prisoner by the Japanese. I don't think that we would have. I don't think that would have been the right way to handle it even.
I agree. And also there, so this theory, that one stops there because the second theory is so similar.
Okay.
And that was that she wasn't necessarily a spy, but she did crash land on the Marshall Islands where she was taken prisoner by the Japanese.
Okay.
So it's the same theory. She's just not a spy.
Okay.
And in that one, the evidence for that, again, is the Tokyo Rose.
Okay.
And there was a photo that was found in, like, 2012 or something in the U.S. archives of two people on the Jesuit Island, which with in the background of this kind of blurry photo looks like what could potentially be her Lockheed Electra. A woman sitting with short hair, which they measured and were like, somehow the proportions seem to be appropriate for Amelia. And then a man who could be Fred Noonan based on his teeth and hairline.
So the idea is she lived out the rest of her days there.
Yes. And she was basically like in an internment situation and she died.
She was like So she was never free. She died in like an internment sort of camp, POW camp kind of vibe. That's very unbelievable to me.
And there are no records of any Japanese prisoner of war named Amelia Earhart.
Yeah, I feel like that'd be a pretty big clue.
Yeah. Which they do say, like, you know, but a lot of the documentation at that time was destroyed. So it's not necessarily that there wasn't ever.
And I don't know how much documentation there would be for POW camp anyway. I truly don't know how that would go, but I would assume that getting their, you know, name and info would not be like a high priority. I'm gonna say again, like, so on this show we are going to, I think, have a lot of times where there's a blurry photo that is people's evidence for a conspiracy theory, but it is not good enough for me. I would need to see like Japan discovering her remains. I would need to see if the plane was intact in that picture, what happened to it. You know, so that it's just not. And again, the radio thing, the voices sound like other voices.
So yeah, and so George Putnam, there are two things that kind of made this theory go viral, is that George Putnam did actually go in to listen to Tokyo Rose broadcast.
Yeah.
And he did come out and say
probably
that
not a podcast.
Broadcast, sorry. Old school podcast.
Just in the 1940s, being like, better help is therapy you could use.
And it's Amelia freaking Earhart. Yeah. So George Putnam goes in, he listens to a lot of these broadcasts, and he says that he's like, definitively, this is not my wife.
Okay.
But at the same time, based on their marriage, they didn't have an unhappy marriage, as far as anybody is aware. But I'm like, do I know that George Putnam knows my girl as well as Eleanor Roosevelt?
Yeah, get Eleanor. You're like, Eleanor, is this Amelia?
Is this Amelia? And then at the same time, he actually signs a deal, because the estate was kind of in ruins at this point, for them to make a movie loosely based on the events of her trip around the world. Oh. And in that one, she is a spy.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. So maybe he also had motive to be like, nope, not her.
Potentially.
Because there's money involved. And once you get money involved, everything gets a little squeaky.
Yes.
Is that a word? Squeaky?
Squeaky is a word.
Squeaky? Squeaky? It's fine. I still think that this theory doesn't hold a lot of water, unlike probably Amelia Earhart's plane.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, it's possible. It's not a crazy out there theory, really. So I guess 3 out of 10?
3 out of 10?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is one of the crazy out there theories.
Love it.
And that is that she actually faked her death.
Okay.
And then she changed her name, took up residence in New Jersey, changed her name to Irene.
And she went to New Jersey, of all places?
That's where I think it falls apart. Yeah. It made absolutely. Believe.
That she willingly went to New Jersey.
And she just was like, New Jersey is the place for me. She's been all over the world.
And she's like, this is my home.
I want to go to New Jersey. So she changed her name to Irene. This was actually, it was a theory that was popularized by a book that came out. And it was called Finding Amelia, I believe. And in it, the author was like, she clearly faked her death. She's living in New Jersey. She is this woman, Irene. And then this woman had to come out and sued him in a defamation lawsuit.
And be like, I'm not Amelia Earhart, which is something Amelia Earhart would say.
Which is something Amelia Earhart would say. And it all kind of bleeds back into, she was a spy. She faked her death. So now she's Irene, and she has to sue because he found this out, and nobody can know that she's really Amelia.
And really, she's just like a lady named Irene that's like, please leave me alone, Jesus Christ.
That is literally what her case was.
Yeah.
And then she won the case with a $1.5 million.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
When was this? This was like a while ago, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, this would have been in like the 80s.
So $1.2 million. A little bit more than it is now.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Or this, like the 70s or 80s.
Hell yeah, hang your hat on that shit.
Yeah.
I wish someone would think I'm Amelia Earhart.
So we could get some money. Yeah,
so I could get some money.
Maybe that's who's going to fund this podcast.
I'm so ready to be litigious. Like,
Doug, the litigious gay.
Just give me someone to sue. I'll do it.
Oh, my goodness.
So that one's, yeah, 0 out of 10.
0 out of 10?
It's not Irene in New Jersey. Please just leave the poor woman
and
alone.
And I like the name Irene, but it's also like her name was Amelia, which is so melodic.
Irene, great name, but step down from Amelia.
It's a step down from Amelia. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Okay, so those are like our first kind of more out there theories. Uh-huh. Now, much more widely accepted, it's one of two options.
Yeah.
She crashed on Gardner Island, or landed-ish on Gardner Island.
she got there.
She got there.
However quickly is the question. Yeah.
Because they were running out of fuel. They landed there, and it would be the reason that this is a theory that could work is at the time that she was flying and trying to find Howland Island, mm-hmm. the reef, so it's this like little tiny strip of land surrounded by a coral reef. Mm-hmm. And at the time she was flying, the coral reef would have been exposed and it would have been visible and the tide would not have been over the water at the time. So this is where you get the theories where she was eaten by coconut crabs.
The crabs thing, yeah.
The crabs mm-hmm. thing, yes. So the crabs thing.
What a terrible way to go.
Right?
And
so, like, looking into it, the theory is more not that she was eaten by the crabs, but they died on this island.
And the crabs are, in fact,
carnivorous.
Did you watch season one of House of the Dragon? Like, the early episodes, they had the crab guy that, like, tagged people up so the crabs would eat them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just can't. Like, that's so terrible. Oh,
and,
my
like,
God.
I don't think about crabs as being that violent.
Me either, but Jesus Christ.
I know, right? And these coconut crabs are fucking huge. Like, these are monsters. If you look up a picture of them.
I'm going to look up a picture right now.
They're massive. Okay, so on this island,
coconut.
The theory is they crash landed. The tide came in, swept the plane away, but they had 2 or 3 days where they were on the island and she continued to radio for help. And there's two particular instances, one in Texas, one in Iowa, and one in Florida, where she's been noted on the radio. And they, you know, like, and they have record of it because people wrote it down. So the one in Florida specifically I'll mention is this woman heard her on the radio. And she was like, I am Amelia Earhart. Plane is down. We need help. Mm. And there's like a man in distress in the background. And she's
being unhelpful.
Yeah, exactly. And that she could be saying down by Norwich, which the Norwich was a boat that had crashed onto Gardner Island as well.
Oh, okay. So That theory holds a lot of water.
It holds a lot of water. Now, the woman who recorded this had mm-hmm. said Norwich, NYNY. Mm-hmm. And so there is some discrepancy about whether or not she was saying New York or Norwich. And if this woman didn't know any better, she would put New York.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Also, look at this picture of this coconut crab. It's the size of this garbage can.
Yeah, they're fucking terrifying.
Oh my God, could you imagine landing on this little strip of an island with gigantic fucking crab like that? Oh my God.
And I don't know if this would be a good case, any ecologist can, like, you know, say if this is right or wrong, but there is in evolutionary biology this like weird phenomenon that happens where if you take a big thing and you put it on an island, it becomes a small thing.
Yeah.
So like pygmy elephants.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you put them on an island and over generations, now you have a small elephant. Well, now you have this tiny island and you put a small crab there and now you have giant fucking crab.
Yeah. But why? So big.
But why so big?
But why is it so big?
Okay, so then there's this guy named Rick Gillespie who has funded many, many expeditions to Gardner Island to look for evidence of this happening. They've done an experiment. And they've gone through records, and there was record in 1940 that some British, like, colonist dude mm-hmm. landed on the island, found human remains by a woman's shoe.
Okay.
Sent them off for processing. And then Rick Gillespie's team, many, many years later, has tried to find those bones but can't find them. Now, the original report says that they were the bones of a man, but
based on... Why would you know?
Yeah, so based on, like, the some measurements and shit like that. But they're like, but he didn't do a good enough job. They didn't measure the femur. They didn't look at the skull because she had, like, she had that... She had a gap in her teeth, and they, like, didn't, like, take this into account, whatever, whatever.
Yeah, way before Madonna's gap teeth.
Yeah, and so this was, like, kind of like, oh, she was eaten by crabs, because there had been experiments also where they put, like, a dead pig on the island, and the crabs just ripped that sucker apart.
Jesus.
And took the bones into their burrows and everything.
Oh, so the bones could just be gone.
So the bones could just be gone.
What a horrifying experiment.
I fucking know, right? And so then they have also tried to go to the island and dig up. They were trying to take soil samples to get DNA extractions from that. Mm-hmm. They have found a pocket knife.
Okay.
Which matches that was listed on Amelia's inventory.
Okay.
A zipper, which is made, which was an American brand and would have been on a bomber jacket,
mm-hmm.
as well as a makeup container, like based on the shape of the tube. They're basically like, this was made in America and it was only this one particular freckle cream, which Amelia had freckles and was apparently not fond of them.
Oh, so she might have had that freckle
cream. So she had freckle cream.
Okay.
So it's the radio continuing after the second, like mm-hmm. after July 2nd, then the stuff that they found on the island and potentially human remains that are inconclusive who they belong to.
I guess, so the big question that's left over then is, so there's a reef surrounding this little island.
Correct.
Shouldn't there be some bits of the plane left?
You would think there'd be some bits of the plane. So that's where that's where the theory kind of loses.
Yeah.
Loses itself a little bit, because they've done several expeditions there and they can't find any part of the plane.
Yeah, what happened to the plane?
Exactly what happened to the plane. So they think that it just tumbled in, so the tide came in over the reef, took and the plane.
Was enough to, like...
And it just fell into the ocean and completely fell apart.
I guess it could have had, like, a little mini tsunami happen too. Like, it wouldn't be much for water to overtake that island, I imagine.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's not a satisfying answer, but
Yeah, it's not a satisfying answer. The other, and this is the most widely accepted answer, is they ran out of gas and they crashed straight into the ocean.
Yeah,
and 100% sunk.
Yeah, that's what I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I think, unfortunately, the simplest answer is often...
The right
answer.
Yeah. And so there was no, which is the unfortunate part, there was no last salvation.
No.
They
But at
I
least
think,
it wasn't those fucking crabs.
But at least it wasn't those fucking crabs.
Yeah, anything's better than that.
And I do think that there has to, and I didn't look into this super well, but like the plane is obviously not like made to be on the water. But if there is any chance that she had any amount of like floating for any period of time, mm-hmm. she would have continued to call for help.
Yeah.
And you could have heard, because in one of the radio transmissions, you hear like potentially Fred Noonan in the back and he's injured and he's trying to get out of the plane. Mm-hmm. And she's trying to keep him in the plane. Which to me, it's like, okay, well, they're kind of like floating.
Or there's a bunch of crabs around. Or there's a bunch of there's crabs. They're like, do not get out of the plane. Those fucking crabs will eat you, goddammit.
Right. And so then eventually the plane would take on water and it would more or less dive in and just go straight to the bottom.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I guess it's hard with the... Because it was like 2 days of
mm-hmm.
radio calls.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
That is weird.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, it's not conclusive proof. I mean, these are primary sources, but they're journal entries and...
Yeah.
Other people had radios.
Who else heard it? Like, it does, you know, I don't want to be like, well, this doesn't fit into what I believe, so I'm going to assume this lady's lying, but do we know this lady's lying?
Well, I wouldn't even know that she's lying so much as it could be anybody could get on the radio and pretend
to be like, I'm Amelia Earhart.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah.
Okay. So, final thoughts and scores.
I would like to present my own conspiracy theory.
Actually. I love it. Yes.
Her plane and communication was all fine, but she got so sick of Fred's shit that she's like, I'm crashing this bitch. She's like, I'm taking us both down.
So she did. Your theory is that it was a murder-suicide.
It was a murder-suicide because she was over his bullshit. And my evidence is that's what I believe.
Is that okay, cool.
But, no, so I think overall the most likely is, yeah, they probably just crashed into the ocean.
Which is just so sad.
It's so sad. But that's, the thing about the spy holds, you know, that it could be true. But again, I don't believe she was a Japanese POW. I just don't.
I just, like, the thing that makes that fall apart for me is if she was captured in any capacity, there would have been ransom that would have had to have been documented.
And there's, in my mind, little reason to not use that for American propaganda. That's the Japanese took Amelia Earhart.
Yeah.
You cannot buy that kind of propaganda.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, they, it would have been on the news, there would have been a more coordinated effort to get her, there wouldn't be this some back, like, alley right. exchange of the plane to destroy.
Yeah, it. And they want to, like, the other thing is that people would be like, well, the secret is that she's a spy, and they're using that to keep her captive. And it's like, okay.
Well, secret's out, then.
I'm confused. Like, why?
She turns out, yes, she is an asset, but there's no reason to keep that secret anymore if she is a prisoner.
Especially, I don't, yeah.
But, truly. I mean, I don't, I'm not a diplomat. I'm not great at international relations. Yeah,
like, I don't know what it was that she could have known or been doing that was so top secret that mm-hmm. the U.S. government then covered it up.
And coordinated then with the Japanese government after the fact to continue to cover it up.
To continue to cover it up.
That falls apart. Like, I could believe she was a spy. I don't believe that she was caught.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I've asked you not to look up Amelia Earhart.
Yep.
Because now it's time for us to come full circle.
Oh, so excited. Okay.
So the day that I started looking into Amelia Earhart that we were set to originally record, and this is why I believe the simulation is going too fast, and that I may in fact be the main characters, because the day that I started researching this, they found her plane. Potentially.
Okay.
In the Pacific Ocean. Near Howland Island.
Okay.
At the bottom of the ocean.
Well, that would be where it would make the most sense.
Yep.
Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane. Okay. That's, to me, that's that. Like, or.
There is no or. It's not conclusive. It's this weird thing that I do find kind of interesting. The dude who found it, his name is Tony Romeo. It was just some.
Was that the interesting part? Is that his name is Tony Romeo?
No, it's that he's a super rich, like, real estate dude. Sold off $11 million in real estate assets to fund Deep Sea Vision.
Did he make his own fucking submersible?
Pretty much. God, I don't think he has. It. I don't know if
these
it's a submersible.
Fucking rich people.
I fucking know, right? And they're like, I just want to find the Titanic and Amelia, whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, they think that they have, like, imagery that they've taken of the seafloor a little bit less than 100 miles from Howland Island, and that it could potentially be her plane. It's not conclusive yet.
Well, we're going to have an update if they do,
like, pull it out.
Pull it out and, like, I don't know, find her in it, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Some crabs in there. That's exciting, though. Yeah. Of course it's the fucking rich guy with the fucking...
I know, right?
Yeah. Deep sea adventures.
Yeah.
Stupid motherfucker.
I know, right?
That Amelia would hate that.
I fucking know, right?
You'd be like, get me Eleanor.
So, potentially...
You know who Amelia Earhart would love? Renee Rapp.
Oh my god, I think she would.
Oh my god, yeah.
She'd be
like... I've been obsessed with her. That's a different topic. Yeah.
Because of her her interviews.
Yes.
And being ageist.
And just being amazing. And she's like, whenever, I don't know, she'll be like, yeah, full offense.
I do like it when she does
that. Yeah.
And you know that she now does, she used to identify as bisexual, but she now pretty much fully identifies as a lesbian.
Yeah.
And so recently on stage, I saw that she took, like, a lesbian flag and was singing the Pretty Girls.
Yeah.
And was like, the lyrics originally were, oh shit, yeah, your boyfriend can come too.
Yeah.
And on stage, she was like, no, your boyfriend cannot fucking come. And he's ugly.
I love her. Yeah. Anyways, sorry. She's been on my mind a lot lately.
Amelia Earhart is actually Renee Rapp reincarnated.
Wait.
Renee Rapp is Amelia Earhart.
No, it doesn't make sense the first way, but I like it better.
Amelia Earhart actually faked her own death. She was Irene. Now she's Renee Rapp.
Yeah, now Renee Rapp is her granddaughter.
And she can't die because aliens.
Yeah, I was really surprised aliens didn't make...
I was also a little bit surprised. Yeah. And I think the reason is because going into this, I don't know why I thought that she went missing in the Bermuda Triangle, but I definitely thought that she went missing in the Bermuda Triangle.
She's not.
She did not.
But there's another triangle in the Pacific Ocean. I don't know if she's in that one. It's like the Dragon's Triangle or something.
Yeah, so there's more. Yeah. There's many. So that, I mean that.
But maybe she did go missing in the Bermuda Triangle. There was fog.
That's true. There was fog.
And there was ocean.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Two things.
There was radio, like, interference.
Interference, yeah. And then she went missing.
Was heard two days after the fact.
Yeah, it sounds like she got in a little wormhole to the Bermuda Triangle. And that's,
we've been looking in the wrong spot.
Yeah. Have we looked in the Bermuda Triangle?
That's final answer.
Send that rich guy.
Send Tony Romeo out there.
Tony Romeo. What a stupid fucking name.
I know, right? I feel like I need to fact check myself on that.
I feel like Tony Romeo is only a good name if you're a drag king. That's it. That's the only way I'll be okay with it.
I'm gonna get that. Also, funded by like real estate. I don't know. It just...
Yeah. Yeah.
Her memory. Ew. He's doing her dirty.
But yeah, no, that was, I think... unfortunately, the inevitable end was that her plane was going to be found near Howland Island.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the thing that is sad is in any of the situations, regardless of what is true, she did die.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, and that's so shitty.
And she was absolutely a treasure. Lesbian treasure.
Lesbian treasure.
Yeah, anything.
That is the end of that. I know this one was a long one, so thank you all for listening through, if you are still here, to get to the end of the story of Amelia Earhart.
Don't worry, next week's will be shorter.
I kind of like that question mark.
We'll see. Thanks everybody for listening. If you have any sort of ideas for the show or comments on what we've done, you can find us on social media at Who's Funding This Podcast. You can also email whosfundingthispodcast@gmail.com with any of your own conspiracy theory ideas.
Or money.
You can
fund this podcast.
You can fund this podcast.
Yeah.
Oh my God, when we eventually get a Patreon, we'll answer the question.
Who's funding this podcast?
Anyways, you guys have a great day. Go out there and don't believe the government lies.
Don't believe them.
Bye.
Bye.